Welcome to S&Z's podcast series, S&Z Critical Insights. I'm Waldo Jones, a partner of Sullivan & Cromwell in Sydney, Australia, where I head up S&Z's Australia practice. I'll be addressing developments in Australia resulting from COVID-19. Today, we're going to talk about Australian legislative and regulatory developments impacting on Australian companies, including parties seeking to acquire Australian businesses, opportunities and considerations for Australian companies in the U.S. capital markets in light of COVID-19, and some important issues that companies should be aware of when considering debt liability management and restructuring transactions in the U.S. debt capital markets. In terms of legislative and regulatory developments, it's worth mentioning at the outset that up until the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, Australia had experienced a period of sustained economic growth with relatively stable business and consumer confidence, as well as falling unemployment rate. This was in spite of the impact of the bushfires during January and February of this year. In response to the ongoing COVID pandemic, Australian federal and state governments, as well as regulators, have introduced a variety of measures. In particular, the Australian federal government has implemented two rounds of emergency policies to support those affected by the coronavirus-driven economic downturn, including economic stimulus. A third set of measures is expected imminently. Financial stimulus measures have included interest rates being cut to a record low of 25 basis points by the Reserve Bank of Australia, and two rounds of financial stimulus have been announced by the federal government totaling Australian dollar 189 billion or 9.7% of gross domestic product. Social policies have included prioritization of resources to support the health system and manage the outbreak. Substantial payments to assist lower income and affected people, including income support for individuals, household payments to lower income families, the ability to release superannuation or pension funds on a temporary basis, and a temporary 50% reduction of superannuation minimum drawdown rates. There's also been targeted support of up to $1 billion for impacted regions. In terms of direct and indirect support to business, the federal government provided $715 million of relief specifically to airlines. Business cash flow support has been provided for small and medium-sized enterprises, namely those businesses with revenues annually of less than $50 million, up to $100,000 in the aggregate, as well as a number of tax relief measures to support cash flows. A number of significant legal and regulatory changes have also been introduced. The Australian Stock Exchange, or the ASX, which is responsibility for regulating disclosure by its listed companies, has provided guidance and temporary relief in respect of its continuous disclosure obligations. Specifically, the ASX indicated that it does not expect listed entities to announce information that relate to matters of supposition where it is insufficiently definite to warrant disclosure. Put simply, the ASX has clarified that a listed company's continuous disclosure obligations do not extend to predicting the unpredictable. The ASX is strongly encouraging entities that have not reviewed their published earnings guidance in light of COVID-19 to do so, and if it's no longer current, to update it or withdraw it entirely. The ASX has advised that operational decisions, which are likely to have a material effect on the price or value of a listed entity's securities, should be immediately announced to the market. For example, a decision to lay off a large number of employees or suspend certain operations. Importantly, and recognizing that many Australian listed entities will need to urgently raise capital in the coming months due to the economic impact of COVID-19, the ASX has also introduced temporary relief to facilitate emergency capital raising until July 31 of this year. Most significantly, and subject to certain conditions, the ASX has increased the 15% limit on equity placements to 25%. The ASX has also removed the ratio of 1-for-1 for non-renounceable entitlements or rights offerings, and entities are able to request back-to-back trading halts up to a total of 4 days to consider and prepare for capital raisings. Certain other changes have been made to insolvency laws designed to mitigate the financial distress caused by economic downturn, including relief from personal liability for directors trading while insolvent for a 6-month period. In terms of the Australian Foreign Investment Review Board, or commonly referred to as FIRB, effective from March 29 of this year, all proposed foreign investment in Australia that is subject to the Foreign Acquisitions and Takeovers Act of 1975 requires approval of the Treasurer, regardless of the value of the investment or the nature of the foreign investor. The Treasurer indicated that these measures are necessary to safeguard the national interest as the coronavirus outbreak puts intense pressure on the Australian economy and Australian businesses. This policy has been implemented by reducing all monetary screening thresholds to zero. The changes expand the Australian Foreign Investment Review regime to all transactions involving the acquisition of an interest in an Australian entity, business, or land, regardless of the size of the transaction. This has the effect of applying the very restrictive requirements for government investment approval that apply to foreign government investors to all non-Australian investors. It's expected that this will significantly affect the ability of foreign investors to compete for M&A deals and real estate assets in Australia. Examples of common transactions that generally would not be considered to be subject to the Act, which may now be, include non-Australian transactions involving a foreign acquirer, seller, and target, but where the change of control of an Australian entity, even if the Australian entities are of immaterial value in the context of the transaction, and internal reorganizations by multinational corporate groups involving changes in ownership of Australian entities, even if those entities are of little value. In terms of the opportunities and considerations for Australian companies in the U.S. capital markets, we are currently assisting a number of our Australian clients with preparing for equity or debt offerings in the U.S., particularly those seeking to take advantage of the relief I mentioned by the ASX to facilitate emergency capital raising. Due to the extreme volatility in equity and debt markets in recent weeks, the key considerations for companies is to have their documentation ready so they are prepared to launch an offering on short notice when market conditions permit. For instance, there have been a number of emergency equity raisings in recent weeks, particularly in recent days, as the equity markets have bounced off their lows. A number of further significant capital raisings are expected over coming weeks and months, particularly if the economy remains weak or continues to deteriorate. Still, we are a long way from the $98 billion in capital raises that occurred during the global financial crisis in 2008 and 2009. Particular challenges raised by these equity offerings are structuring them to allow participation by institutional investors in the United States on a private placement or Rule 144A basis. This requires compliance with U.S. private placement requirements and publicity restrictions, and sometimes creates a tension between a company's legitimate desire to fully inform the market and restrictions on what can be said about the offering in a public forum, such as on unrestricted teleconferences and webcasts. In terms of debt raisings, we are working with several Australian companies considering possible Rule 144A investment grade debt offerings, as well as with a number of Australian and New Zealand financial institutions that are in the process of updating their U.S. debt borrowing programs. In addition to the challenge of ensuring their disclosure appropriately reflects the potential impact and risk posed by COVID-19, companies and their underwriting banks need to be mindful of the so-called 135-day period for purposes of the auditors providing negative assurance in their comfort letter, which expires on or about May 14th for December year-end or half-year-end reporting companies. Also, the ability of auditors to provide bring-down stub period comfort after the latest management accounts is particularly challenging in the current environment, as it's difficult, if not impossible, for management to provide representations as to no change to selected financial line items post-February. Another matter to be mindful of is maintaining the consistency of disclosure in the domestic and U.S. international markets to avoid allegations of differential disclosure. This becomes particularly challenging when undertaking an equity raising without a prospectus in reliance on the ASX continuous disclosure regime, where the Rule 144A debt offering will follow shortly thereafter, utilizing a detailed Rule 144A and 10B5 compliant offering document. In terms of the issues that companies should be aware of when they're considering debt liability management and restructuring transactions in the U.S. debt markets, we are also currently working with several Australian companies considering debt tender offers, some of which are proposed to be financed by issuing new debt in the current low interest rate environment. This will allow a company to refinance its debt at a lower all-in cost while extending the maturity of the debt. We are also advising companies seeking amendments or waivers to potential or actual covenant breaches. In the 144A market, this is typically achieved through a consent solicitation, which is sometimes structured as a tender offer to buy back the debt with exit consents. Depending on the leverage investors feel they may have and the terms of those securities, this can be a relatively expensive exercise. Seeking consents or waivers in the U.S. private placement market raises its own set of challenges, as the note agreement typically has an equal treatment provision. Also, the sheer number of companies that are approaching investors for consents and waivers in the current environment means it's sometimes difficult to attract investors' attention, particularly as many of them, along with bankers and lawyers, are working remotely. Thank you for listening to S&C Critical Insights. For more information about our practice, please visit us on the web at www.sulcrom.com.